You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. Over the summer, we're taking a break, so we've picked some of our favourite stories to play for you over the next few weeks. We'll be back with new episodes in February.
Hi, I'm Britta Jorgensen. I'm one of the supervising producers for All the Best. And one of my favourite stories is Chamber Pot Opera by Tegan Nichols. It's a story about opera performers in the Queen Victoria Building bathrooms in Sydney. This piece always sticks in my head. It's from 2017, but I often sort of find myself thinking about it as one of my favourites that I heard on All the Best, just because it is such a bizarre story, and also it sounds really great and is kind of fun, but also has kind of a serious point to be made too. I love it.
I was told when I started learning singing, and I opted to do classical voice instead of voice for leisure, at that time not knowing the difference, that there were three roles for women, the witches' roles, the bitches' roles and the britches' roles. So that is to say, the evil characters, the whiny characters or the pants roles. So I had wanted to cobble together my own opera that challenged the roles of women in opera. My name is Clemmy Williams, and I am the director of Chamber Pot Opera, and I suppose one of three creators of the project and the originator.
My name is Thomas DeAngelis. I was brought on board to be a producer. I was also the dramaturg for the show. Clemmy asked me to coffee and glebe and said, I've got this idea for a show and I've always wanted to do it.
Wanting to cobble together an opera that challenged women's roles. And I was thinking about what the setting for this should be, and kind of famously, autonomous space for women is the women's bathroom.
What the sort of idea was, wouldn't it be great if we could do it in the QVB?
My partner said, QVB bathrooms are very nice. Dragged me up there and they were really nice.
Basically, I called the QVB and I got in contact with their general manager, and the general manager, like, it was such an easy process. Like, I reckon it took all of 2 days. They were back to us within a week and were like, we are very keen for this to happen, provided it doesn't impact on the stuff that's going on at that time of year. So we had a very limited window in which to produce the show. So that gave us a week, and we occupied the bathroom for that week, only at night though.
My name's Kieran. My role was the music director. So I accompanied on piano in the performances, and I took all of the music rehearsals as well. We had three characters that we kind of had to build up from scratch really quite quickly. I mean, it was a very short piece, and the idea was that these three characters are meeting each other for the first time, and they're also the audience is meeting them for the first time. The other thing is we wanted to choose things deliberately that were known and were popular. Because the idea was to kind of turn the genre on its head a little bit. We wanted to get those pieces that were really representative of the genre in the popular imagination. So things like the Habanera from Carmen, that was one of those pieces that we went, yes, it's so typical of opera, so let's use that.
Three women, and so I wanted there to be three storylines. The storylines are based on those preconceived ideas. For example, the britches role, the pants role, the male role, is played by a woman, and so, man, more often than not, that role is highly sexualized. It was very important to me that we showed a woman being sexual and it being okay. That particular story arc is of a woman that's just gone on a friend date, but then it's gotten a bit weird, and then it wasn't a friend date, and then like she went in for the kiss, and then she wasn't sure, and now she's trying to see if she can get any further by texting this person, and she's trying to apologize, but she's had too many drinks.
I have a request that you may disagree with, Kieran. I would like Britt's phone to ring a couple of times.
Here's the first one.
Ring, ring.
And she doesn't know whether she's kind of come on too strong or how it's all of those nervous first date feelings. She was getting text messages through one of her aria from the person that she'd been on a date with. So the music would be romping along and suddenly would come to a pause, and then five text messages would come in or a phone call would come in. And that was quite funny because, you know, normally mobile phones are banned from the opera. You're not allowed to have them going off, but here they were going off in the middle of a piece.
Champagne, chocolate, wine, lollipop, cake, wine again.
Mainly food.
Sugar.
I'm just in the food section.
I think that is one of the most fascinating things about opera, is that you have those human characters there. Mostly, sometimes they're gods. But, you know, it deals with human situations, and, you know, we do face those situations every day. And that's why it's a genre that's I do think is accessible if it's done well.
Nothing about opera means that it has to be this highbrow, serious thing that is only for the very privileged. Our objective at the outset was always to make it accessible, because we were expecting an audience that wasn't completely across the subtleties of opera and the ins and outs of opera. And I think it was important that in the rehearsal room that was reflected. And I mean, that's a really convoluted way of saying that if you want people to have fun at your show, you need to have fun making it and doing it.
It's either time or not. It's kind of like a mule with a spinning wheel. Damn if he knows how he got it, and damn if he knows how to use it.
You can't find that.
Essentially, any particular joke that you can make about the opera was kind of a starting point for staging. Like, oh, do they sing from the cubicles? Yes, they do. Do they draw on the mirror? Yes, they do. Do they, you know, throw toilet paper around? Yes, they do. Because I wanted to play to the expectations of the audience, but then delight them beyond that.
My absolute favourite moment was when they performed the flower duet. It's a very, very famous duet for two females, and it's typically a very beautiful moment on stage, and things kind of come to a standstill. In our production, production, the two characters were forming kind of... they were decorating the bathroom with long strands of toilet paper. And they made this lovely kind of hanging decoration with toilet paper as they were singing the aria, which was a lot of fun. It was very, very funny to watch. But it ended up being quite beautiful as well. And then there was a small bubble machine that came on, which it drove me a bit nuts because the bubbles kept going all over the keyboard and suddenly the keys become very slippery. but that was, I think that was hands down my favourite moment, because it was just this wonderful, very, very famous piece. Very beautiful piece turned on its head, but still in its own way very beautiful.
It was a wonderful challenge and one I haven't experienced with my work this year, which was we sold out, and we sold out quickly because there were very few seats in the bathroom. Surprise, surprise. So I think kind of hitting on something so beautiful and not being able to share it with more people was quite a challenge. But, of course, it wouldn't be what it is without the intimacy. That's one of the most special things about it, is you don't usually get to see opera up close. So more often than not, an opera singer has to play to an audience, whereas in this situation they could just be. And I think that was a recurring note, and therefore another challenge for me was saying to the performers, you know, you don't have to act this moment, just be present in it, because we can see you, we can see your every movement. We're with you. You don't have to show us. Just relax into it.
The show was performed at the QVB, but the story was set in that QVB bathroom. Those women that came in to the bathroom during the show in the story had come from work or work drinks or a function in the city, and they had retreated into a very private space. There may very well be toilets in there, but there's a couch as well. Crucially, there's a couch, and there's big mirrors, and there's, and it's clean, and it's for, it's respite. It's about it being a place where one goes to be alone and safe, or together and safe, as it were.
One of my favourite parts was, I think, the first time we were in the QVB bathroom for a rehearsal, and there we did Barcarolle. So when you hear two voices together in that incredible acoustic environment, your heart just kind of melts. So yeah, that's the short answer. I don't think there's a long answer. Yeah, it's just good to work with good people, kind people, talented people, intelligent people. I'm thankful for that.
You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. It's the summertime, so we're taking a bit of a break. We've been playing you some of our favourite stories, and we'll be back with new episodes in February.
Hi, Lee Robinson here, SYN Community Coordinator at All the Best. I like this story because it's extremely relatable. It's the kind of tale that you'd tell your kids as you fondly remember that time in your life where you did a lot of stupid things. A time when you're caught between being an adult and being a teenager, your early 20s. And it also features shooting stars by Bag Raiders, which is always a positive thing.
Sitting around with a bunch of friends, just shit-talking, and then, boom, you're in a share house, you're like 22, and there's this turkey that's bloody gobbling at every hour of the morning.
How many of the absurd ideas you've had with your friends have actually come to fruition? Imagine if we all lived in a bus. Imagine if we all got mullets. Yeah, well, be careful what you wish for. The following is a story of when talking rubbish with your mates gets out of hand. The year was 2009, and me and most of my friends were in our second year of uni in Newcastle, New South Wales. Like a lot of students, we spent the bare minimum amount of time on our studies. During the day, we lay on the beach for hours. And at night, we'd have the occasional party. We were social creatures. We spent a lot of time together, and as such, we did a lot of stupid things together. There was the time our friend got stuck in a plastic children's toy car. There was the time one of us got a med student friend to put her leg in plaster as practice, then had to go to uni the next day and pretend she'd sprained her ankle. And then there was the time we got a turkey.
Jeff the turkey. A legend. The myth.
My friend Ben was there on the night the idea of Jeff the turkey was first thrown around.
I can't remember how we got to that point, but my friend Andy found a turkey for sale on Gumtree, and then Jeff the turkey entered our lives.
Amongst the ragtag crew of 20-somethings whose lives Jeff entered was my friend Vaughn.
Who do you think was the real mastermind?
Oh, it would have been Vaughn, for sure. Yeah. She had a way with words and humour and cooked up this joke.
Have you spoken to Vaughn recently?
No, I haven't. Where is she?
Hello?
Good morning, Vaughn. How is it in London this morning?
It's bloody freezing.
Both highly intelligent and hilariously funny, Ben and Vaughn were two standout characters in a group of big personalities. Ben earned the nickname Strange Ben for his unique approach to everyday situations, while Vaughn was infamous for her quick wit and superhuman ability to lose 3 phones and a set of house keys every week.
Is that your keys I can hear rattling?
Oh, yeah, that's my lanyard, sorry. I know I don't need to wear it en route to work. However, it minimises my chance of losing it.
Ben remembers Vaughn fondly.
Resourceful, hilarious, Vaughn's just on another level.
And there's some great stories about Ben.
I can't remember what strange thing he did first to get the name Strange Ben. But he did do some pretty weird things. Like, do you remember at Splendor when he slept in the bath in a suit for 5 days? So I saw him the other day when I was in Australia, and he wasn't really that strange. I don't know whether he's grown out of the strangeness. There was only one strange thing he did, which was asked to put on a song. And then he put on just, like, sounds of weather. So, like, a sound of, like, a mild to heavy storm. So I don't know what's going on there.
Wherever the idea of getting a turkey as a pet came from, once the intention was out there, the concept of Jeff the turkey was an unstoppable force, fated to happen. My friend Andy told the story to his current housemate.
I just remember getting on Gumtree and searching for turkeys for sale. And the only one in New South Wales was about 10 minutes down the road. So, yeah, it's a sign.
Obviously it was a sign. So Andy and a few friends got in the car and drove off on their mission.
It was like 4 of us boys, or like, I don't know, 20-year-old uni students, behind a turkey. It would have been sus as... Anyway, the guy comes out and he's like, good to see you boys getting into turkeys. This is him down here. And I guess you could say it was love at first sight.
Jeff was a healthy young turkey with shiny feathers and a twinkle in his eye.
Oh, yeah, this is him. He's just starting to strut and gobble. He was only like a teenager. That's what he was doing at stage, and strutting was when he like puffed his feathers up and like showed how manly he was. So they were like, fuck yeah, that's perfect.
Like all good soon-to-be pet owners, the guys had stopped to get supplies on their way to collect Jeff.
Like, obviously we wanted to take care of him, so we went to Golo, bought him a little turkey bowl, turkey food bowl, turkey water bowl, and we wanted to get him a collar because I had all these dreams of walking him around town on a lead. So we bought him a kitten collar, which we put on him straight away.
The night Jeff arrived, about a dozen of our friends came around to meet him. It was like when someone has a baby and excited family members come to see the new arrival and offer their best wishes. Although Jeff wasn't quite sure what to make of things, he sat between 2 shrubs in the garden, eyeing everyone warily. But as the days went on, Jeff settled into his new environment, strutting around the backyard and getting to know his new housemates.
He grew comfortable down in the courtyard, We kept his feet up, clean water all the time. I grew quite a bond with Jeff.
Andy had a soft spot for Jeff and became like his big brother, walking around the backyard with him tucked under one arm and teaching him tricks. But not everyone liked Jeff. The fifth housemate, Toast, was unlucky enough to have the only room that backed onto the courtyard.
Hello, my name is Toast. Jeff and I had a love-hate relationship. Each morning around 5 a.m, Jeff would start gobbling. Gobble, gobble, gobble was my morning alarm. 5:30, 6:30, 4:30, it didn't matter to Jeff. Monday to Sunday. I did a lot for Jeff. I fed him, watered him, kept him safe, cleaned his shelter. Whenever I'd go to feed Jeff, he would always attack me. He was aggressive in nature and had some kind of vendetta against me. Why? I don't know. All I showed him was love and compassion. Jeff was an asshole of the turkey.
It was only a matter of time before Jeff's incessant gobbling drew unwanted but totally warranted attention from the surrounding residents. Andy was at home studying when a man from the RSPCA knocked on the door and asked to see the turkey in the backyard.
So I took him down the back and like, here, this is Jeff. And like, Jeff came running up like he did before the bond. He was quite tame by then. Hey, Jeff, gave him a pat. And like the RSPCA guy was like pretty impressed by that. And I'm like, here, watch his tricks, because we taught him some tricks. So like, he used to go and stand over the turkey and he would run backwards between your legs. That was the only trick I taught him. So, but yeah, the guy was like, oh yeah. No, this is pretty good. He's, like, very healthy looking. He's got his clean water and his food.
And then somebody must have told the landlord. Still, I think that landlord had larger problems than the turkey with those tenants.
Andy received a voicemail from the real estate. The property manager was clearly trying her hardest not to laugh as she informed him that the housing of a turkey in the courtyard was in direct contravention to the rules set out in their lease agreement on the keeping of pets. Jeff had to go.
So we had to get rid of Jeff. Like, we know where Jeff would be perfect.
Oh, no.
The uni, it's bushland.
Oh.
He'd be a free turkey. He can hang out with the bush turkeys. We just set him free in the uni, like, secretly knowing someone's going to find him. He's pretty tame. He would go up to the nearest person and be like,
he would hear clink. Beer bottles.
Yeah, clink a beer.
They're my friends.
So Jeff had an unexpected tree change. While back in the city, the boys were left empty nesters. We thought about Jeff a lot in the weeks after his release, hypothesising about what he was up to and where in the pecking order of the uni's bush turkey empire he'd ended up. But I don't think any of us held high hopes of ever seeing Jeff again. But just as fate had brought Jeff into our lives, so fate would bring him back again in a way that none of us saw coming.
Months went by and then, like, Autonomy Day came around, which is a day where you just get drunk really early in the morning. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go. I reckon I know where Jeff might be, because there was a farm on the uni where they had, must have been like an ag farm or something. They had chickens and sheep and stuff.
So Andy headed to the agricultural yard and somehow managed to scale the barbed wire fence and drop down into the compound.
Somehow I got over it because I saw the turkey. I'm like, that's fucking Jeff. And I went in and then, like, I went up and I'm like, I know how I know if it's Jeff or not. So I stood over him and he ran backwards through. No word of a lie. He ran backwards through my legs. I'm like, fuck me dead, it's you, Jeff.
Andy scooped up his long-lost pal, Jeff, somehow managed to jump back over the fence and victoriously took him back to his friend's house down the road.
Got him, grabbed him. I'll put you in the backyard for tonight, Jeff, while I go to sleep. See you in the morning. Wake up in the morning. No, Jeff. No, Jeff.
And it seemed like such a good idea at the time. Such a very...
In his excitement, Andy had forgotten to shut the gate, and Jeff escaped into the night, never to be seen again.
Jeff was gone, and that was the last we ever saw of Jeff. But he lived a pretty good life. He lived a really good life whilst in the uni farm, I imagine.
And this has long been accepted as the sad and somewhat anticlimactic ending to their tale of friendship. We'd always said that Andy should have left Jeff where he'd found him, and that he'd probably loved his time at the uni farm area hanging out with the sheep. But could there be a bit more to the tale? A silver lining to the unsolicited kidnapping we'd always told Andy he was guilty of?
So I just sat down to Google Newcastle University, New South Wales agricultural area, and nothing actually came up, which I thought was strange because we'd sort of always just thrown around the idea that it was an agricultural area. I mean, Andy said there were sheep there. It looks like maybe it wasn't. We've got a lot of searches coming up here. Animal Services Unit, University of Newcastle, Research Advantage. Andy, this story's taken quite the twist. You may have actually rescued Jeff from a life of being a lab turkey. Good job, buddy. Ben,
yeah.
Where do you think Jeff is now?
Jeff is dead. 100% dead. Turkeys don't live that long.
All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney, in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Ryan Pemberton. Jordan Fennell is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best Community Coordinators are Chloe Gillespie and Danny Stewart. Our SYN Community Coordinator is Lee Robinson. Matilda Fay is our social media producer, and I'm your host, Maddie McQueen. Shining Bird composed our theme music, and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. We're heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network, and we're made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find out more at cbf.org.au. You can find all of our episodes at allthebestradio.com. We're also a podcast, so subscribe. We'll be back with new episodes in February.